Hi, I'm Paul Wilkinson from masteringportraitphotography.com, and in this podcast we are going to talk a little bit, if not a lot, about customer service, and we're also going to be doing a quick Q&A from some questions that were sent in by a young photographer called Pippa. Well, I hope your Saturday's going well. It's beautiful here and I've had a cracking week. Not that you care. I don't know if you care or not, but I have had a cracking week. It culminated yesterday in spending some time at the Royal Institution of Great Britain photographing what can only be described as some of the most important photographs ever created. Yes, I have photographed half a dozen or a dozen of Fox Talbot's original Talbot types, or Talbot types, I don't know how you pronounce it. Incidentally, I'd love to have a type of photography named after me. Would you call it a Wilco type or a Wilco graph? I don't know, but I quite like the idea of it. Anyway, Fox Talbot was smart enough, if not cocky enough, to name a particular type of photography technique the Talbot type. And I photographed a dozen of these yesterday at the Royal Institution, along with a dozen or so daguerreotypes. The whole process, one of the most fascinating I've ever done. Beautiful imagery, beginning to fade a little bit, which is why we were there trying to document them. Just a fantastic experience. I cannot tell you how exciting it was to be stood in a darkened room taking pictures of these really unique, groundbreaking, original photographs. But the process of getting there, that's an aside, really. I'm not going to talk about that in too much detail because we're going to bring that up later. I think I'm hoping to publish an article or two on it and maybe do a podcast as well, talking about the experience and the types of images we created. But today's not quite about that. Today's about the process of getting there. And so I come out of Marylebone Station yesterday morning. It's about 8:30 in the morning and I walk up with a ton of kit. I've got my strobes, I've got a camera bag, I've got stands, and it's just me. I'm not working with an assistant. And I walk up to the front of the taxi rank and there's nobody there in the queue. And there are a couple of cabs. Now, this doesn't happen in London. Those of you who know travelling around London, it can be nightmarishly difficult, particularly in what is technically rush hour. But there were two cabs, no queue. So I walked up and I knew I was in trouble the minute I looked inside the driver's window and he was reading what can only be described as the Daily Hate. And he looked up with a degree of frustration. I must have interrupted him mid-vitriol. And he sort of looked at me and I said, the Royal Institution, please, on Albemarle Street, to which he said nothing but folded his paper up and put it down with that kind of body language that says, why me? Now, Albemarle Street isn't particularly difficult to get to from West London. It's a £14 cab ride at best. But nonetheless, he looked pretty grumpy, so I threw my stuff in, very carefully placed my stuff into the back of the cab, climbed in, and he shot off. I mean, he shot off at such a pace that I had to, I usually wear my seatbelt anyway, but I had my seatbelt on and tightened to make sure that if there's any danger of crashing into something, and by danger, I mean likelihood that we're going to crash into something. Now, at the front of Marylebone, it's split into two roads with a central aisle, and he turned back on himself and immediately, and I don't mean like as in 2 minutes down the road. I mean immediately. You could see the traffic queue from where we were, where he'd picked me up. He turned round, turned the car around, and we went straight into the back of a traffic queue. To which he got incredibly angry, as if he hadn't just looked over his shoulder and seen the fact that there was a traffic queue. Now, during this, not only am I now, I've been flung around the back, we're now stationary, 10 seconds into the ride, we're stationary in a queue, and he's left his cab microphone on. Now, in a black cab in London, they have a microphone in the cab that relays back to you what he's saying so that you can answer questions. It's a two-way thing. Now, I was being quiet, and I assume he just didn't notice that he'd left it switched on. So he's put his newspaper down, he's turned on what can now only be described as hatred radio, which is where they let people ring in and just rant. I suppose people find it cathartic, but I just find it really quite stressful. The amount of people who are angry is just beyond belief. We actually live in a pretty wealthy country on the whole, with good services, nice people, and yet people are intent on just raging and ranting, and I find it so frustrating. So I'm sitting in the back of this cab, and that's what I can hear. And then suddenly, My cab driver explodes.
Oh, you f***ing Oi, what the f*** do you think you're f***ing doing? Get in the front f***ing lane.
He pulls alongside this poor lady, winds down his window and continues.
You f***ing bitch! What the f*** do you think?
Now, in the back, I am now like some kind of mime artist, miming things like, I'm so sorry, I'm not with him, I won't pay him, don't worry, it's not your fault. And it carried on. Eventually he realised this queue is going nowhere. So he turns back on himself again, which means now I'm back. I don't mean near to where I started. I mean, I am back precisely where I started. And it's already cost me £4 because it's taken him that long to go round this loop in this traffic queue. To which he finds a gap in the traffic, boots it like a joyrider. I mean, we are now driving this thing like the guy is 17 years old, has just been given the keys to his father's car, and hasn't yet worked out that the car can crash, you know? We scream down bus lanes. We clatter across crossroads. We jump red lights. We nearly kill several pedestrians and a very unfortunate Brompton cyclist. I look out the back window, thinking, I really hope I don't see bodies back there. And we eventually pull in to the Royal Institution, and I'm sweating, and I'm terrified, but he's just given me the fastest cab ride to the Royal Institution I've ever had. Now, I work there all the time, and I know how much that journey should cost. I know how long it takes. And he did it miraculously quickly. So we arrive earlier than I'm expecting, and I eventually straighten myself out, unclip myself from what I was hoping was a reasonably good safety harness, lift everything out onto the street, close the door, and he looks at me and goes, "F***ing sorry about that, mate. I'm just getting f***ing frustrated driving around this f***ing city with these f***ing idiots." So, of course, what I did was tip him and gave him a good tip because I was so speechless, I didn't know what to do. Now, the point of the story is this. He did his job perfectly. He got me across town in rush hour traffic in the fastest time I've ever had. He delivered me to the front door, right to the front door of the Royal Institution. And everything about what he did, he got me from Marylebone Station to the Royal Institution in the fastest time possible. Okay? What he did was perfect. But the way he did it, frankly, freaked me out. And it got me thinking about the difference between types of customer service. And as photographers, you need to hang on to this. The way you do things is in so many ways more important than what you do. Okay, I've said this before, we've come to it, but I just thought this story summed it up. He delivered me really quickly, and yet all I did all day was sweat. I was terrified. I wasn't really very happy about getting into a black cab on the way home either. The way he delivered me to the door left me anything but happy. And yet what he'd done, the actual product he delivered, was on the money. And there's a lesson in life. How you do things, how you approach it, the way you are, is every bit, if not more important than the actual photographs you create, the actual product you deliver, the actual price you charge. It's all about how people feel. It's all about emotions. And that is something worth bearing in mind. And if you're ever wondering about it, just remember me sitting terrified in the back of a cab. Anyway, on to a more serious point. He says, rustling his piece of paper that's got the questions on it. So these questions have... Yeah, I'll rustle it a little bit. Hang on. There we go. It's now folded where it should be. So these questions have come in from Pippa, a young photographer who's studying at university or college. And she asked me a handful of questions, 6 questions. We get these a lot. Feel free to send in questions. I love answering them. It gives me, apart from anything else, something as a sort of a script for a podcast, which means I know at least one person out there will find this interesting. So question one is who, I do it in a Pippa type voice, but I don't know what Pippa sounds like, so I'm going to do it in my own voice. Who, if anyone, has, what do you mean if anyone? Of course people have, but who, if anyone, has inspired your work, past and present? Now, you all get asked this, and gradually over the years, I've learned that I have to have an answer. I can't just say, I just like photographs. I do just love photographs, but there are a few key images, if not photographers, who properly inspire me. Every time I look at their work, and certainly during certain periods of their work, I just find the images utterly enthralling. The first and most important of those is David Bailey. His work, particularly during the 60s, early 60s through to the early 70s, is just incredible. There's something about what he gets out of the characters in front of the lens. With such simple lighting, there's nothing complicated about it. It's just magical, and I absolutely love it. Henry Clark, Brian Duffy, similar kind of thing, similar period. Just gorgeous portraits. And they kind of changed the face of how portraiture was done, the way they were working, the way they engaged their client. And I hang on to everything they did during that period as, for me, the way portraiture should be. More recently, Peter Lindbergh, of course, wonderful photographer, great, great portraiture, black and white, oh, just to die for. And of course, something more up to date, I actually love and admire Jerry Guionis. Now, his is slightly more poppy, fashiony kind of imagery, but the bit I love the most is his use of light and colour. Something about the way he uses light is fascinating. And it's not tricky, it's not complicated, but it's always well observed and it's always beautiful. And incidentally, if anyone's curious, there's a book we have in the studio here. I bought it many years ago. It's called People in Vogue. It's not particularly big, but it is just full of the most incredible, incredible photography. It's the most battered book. Our book is dog-eared. It's torn. Pages have started to fall out. It is well thumbed because every time I delve into this thing, I find something in the way somebody has posed, something in the way it's lit. I don't know. There's just so much in there. It's my favourite book. Right. Question two. Have you ever struggled directionally? What do you mean? You know, I can't find my way out of the back door or what? She says, I personally struggle directing subjects and models and am often unsure of how to approach this. Do you have any tips or skills you swear by? Yes and no. In essence, for me, the way we pose our clients here is we take the very natural and adjust it so it looks better. So I always start with just talking to people. Everything we do here is about dialogue. I've just done a shoot now. I've just finished one. And you can hear it in my nose. I've been outside in the garden photographing. And we are having the worst hay fever ever. Oh, my goodness. I don't think I'm breathing oxygen. I think I'm breathing pure, unadulterated pollen. It is driving me insane. However, I spent the first 10 minutes really just chatting to the mum and dad, chatting to the kids. When we got out to actually do some photos in the garden. I'm still chatting, learning about what they do, the kind of schools they go to, the kind of imagery they like. And all I'm actually doing really is observing their body language. So by the time I actually pick up the camera, I've been talking, they've been talking, they've positioned themselves in ways, I'm reading that. And I then just adjust it so that it's still the way they stand. It's not artificial. I'm not working with models here. I'm working with normal people. They're not posed as such. They're placed in good light. And then I work with them to make the way they are standing feel natural, but also look good. And I just gently manipulate it. And if they start to look uncomfortable, I just start talking again, ask them more questions. And gradually, as they relax, then I judge or adjust the posing until I've got it the way I want it. And for me, that's everything. But we always start with conversation and good light. Actually, when I'm training photographers, I say it's good light. But in fact, actually, I start before then. I've started to read people. I've started to interact with them and get a handle on the way they stand and what they don't like and what they do like. So this particular lady, for instance, every time I swung the camera up, she'd be laughing and then she'd stop laughing. And I noticed it and I said, I joked with the kids. I just said, oh, your mum's got a camera face. And she said, well, I just don't like being photographed laughing. I don't know what it is about her laugh she doesn't like. I can guess. But she said she didn't like it. And so, okay, that's fine. You know, let's do it slightly more gentle. But you still have to keep it upbeat and quick and relaxed. And so those are the skills I would use. They're people skills. Obviously, being able to read the light and being able to pose people. But I don't really pose them that much. I let them pose themselves. My job is to distract them to the point they don't know they're posing. So that's the answer to question two. Question three. I love your work with portraiture. Thank you very much, Pippa. That's very welcome. Do you normally have a shoot plan or do you shoot as you go along? I don't have a shoot plan. I've never had a shoot plan. I did when I started out think I had to have a shoot plan, but it never worked for me. Now, I know there are a lot of people out there that have a shoot plan and love it. I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm saying I don't. The reason is that in those early days when I set out a shoot plan, in my head, I'd look at a series of pictures, or I'd design a series of pictures and say, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do that. And then the client would arrive. The light would be different. It's a bit different in the studio where you've got total control, but as I'm an outdoor specialist, if it suddenly decides it's going to be dark and cloudy, you know, some of the shots are not going to be possible, or if it's raining. I don't always know what they're going to wear, and 9 times out of 10, I may not have met the client certainly recently, and I don't know what it is they're looking for. And so they blow my shoot plan out the water. Now you could do a whole series of interviews with them in advance, get to know them, get them to pick out the kind of shots they want. But I've never found that to be particularly creative. That's just a case of which of my older images would you like me to copy this time? Now, I do copy my own images. Of course I do. There's a great thing about it. As you get more experience, as you build your portfolio, most of the time you're plagiarizing your own work. You're manipulating your own work. You're using work you've done before as your reference and then creating a variation on it. If you're lucky and you have a great client and you have great light and you're really into it, you'll invent some new shots during that shoot. And if they work, they will eventually become the shots that you'll plagiarize in the future. So no, I don't have a shoot plan. And yes, sometimes I think it can be daunting when you go into a shoot like that. But I actually find it liberating and freeing. I find it quick. I find it much easier for me to relax and get into the zone. I find it much easier for me to talk to the client if I'm not thinking, oh, what's the next shot I've got to do? What's the next shot I've got to do? All I'm actually thinking is, you look great there. I'll take a picture of that. Let's move. Right, you look great there. Let's take a picture of that. And that's all I do throughout the session. So no, I don't have a shoot plan. Question 4, how did you start taking portrait shots? What got you into it? Well, I was very lucky in that my grandfather had, we believe it to be a Brownie. It was a Kodak Brownie camera. I still have a version of that camera sitting on the shelf here. And he encouraged me to pick it up and have a play. And I loved it. Ah, I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. My mum and dad, possibly less so, they, I am sure, hated paying for the film and the developing, but there was something about the process of looking through this viewfinder, hitting the button, waiting a couple of weeks until you got it back from the developer, and then reading the nice little stickers they put on, things like, you know, try getting it in focus next time, or use tungsten film if you're going to photograph indoors. And none of that worried me. I just loved it. I loved the process. I loved the excitement. I loved what we did. The whole thing was just magical. And I've been like that the whole of my life. In particular, though, it was always about portraits because I loved to sit opposite someone in a pub. I took my camera everywhere with me for many years. So I'd sit opposite them in a bar, a pub, and then, you know, if the light was good, I'd take a picture. That was it. And I got really excited about it. If someone was something about the atmosphere and the light or the scene or the laughter. I don't know anything, but it was always about people. Landscapes, I love beautiful landscapes, but I don't go looking for them. I love products, really beautifully executed product stuff, but I don't shoot it. People, I just love when I see a face and I think that is going to make the most wonderful photograph. Here, let me do it. And that's how I got started. Question number 5. Do you reach out to subjects and models or do they come to you? If you reach out, how do you go about doing so? Okay, well, there's almost 2 separate answers to this question. 99% of what I do here in the studio are our clients. They come to us. They find us. Obviously, we put our name out there. There's the website, Facebook, magazine articles. They find us. The family I photographed this morning entered an auction where we'd given a voucher to help raise funds for a local school. But many different ways of coming to us. They are looking for photographs. They want it to be me. They'll come to us. However, there's also this stuff we're now doing with Mastering Portrait Photography, where we're reaching out to others and asking them to be models. Now, I haven't done too much of this historically. The first I did, and we're about to work with her again next week, actually, is a lady called Dory, who I met. She was working in a really lovely bar restaurant. She served our food and she was stunningly beautiful. The minute she came, there's something about her body language, the way she looked, her smile, her eyes, everything about her. There was something that was just utterly beautiful. And at the end of the meal, having had a few too many glasses of wine, and this is the first time I'd ever done it, I said to her, listen, I don't know if you're interested. I don't know your name, but I'm a portrait photographer and I would absolutely love to take your photograph. If you'd fancied it, here's my details. And I wrote my details on a piece of paper and handed them to her. And she said, thanks, but no. She said, I get asked quite a bit and I've just never really wanted to do that. And I said, okay, that's fair enough. But, you know, take my details. And if you change your mind, go and have a look at the website. If you change your mind, give us a call. The next day, I got an email saying, ah, I've just looked at your website. And oh my goodness, yes, of course, I'd love to come and be photographed by you, which was hugely flattering. I was really pleased. And this has happened again recently. We've got another model coming in who I did exactly the same thing to. He also said, you know, not certain about that. It's a guy this time. But having looked at the website, changed his mind and said, yes, he would love to. So now I do reach out. You do it with a smile. You do it confidently. And you make sure that whatever it is you give them has somewhere they can see your real work. So we just give them our website. Say, go and have a look across the website. You'll see what I do. You'll see the kind of photographer I am. If you're interested, come to me. You don't chase them. You let them come to you. I've only done it a few times, but every time it's been successful. And that's something we're going to be continuing to do. And I really, actually, I'm beginning to really enjoy the process of asking people. So that's the answer to question number five. The last question, question number six. After looking through your location portraiture, I noticed how well lit the images were. Do you take external lighting or use any other techniques? Well, I have got external lighting. I have got reflectors, but nearly everything you've seen on our website is just daylight, just me, a camera and a client. I don't travel with much kit. I'm about to go down to Le Manoir and do a portrait shoot down there. I'll use just my camera. I won't take anything with me. I know how to read the light. I know how to light someone's face and make their eyes pop just using the light that's around me. I position them carefully. If the light's not working for you, move on. Sometimes that happens. You know, you'll put someone in good light and you look at it and then you realise actually you just made a mistake. It wasn't good light at all. You thought it might be and it wasn't. You've got to be brave and say, nah, that's not working. Move on. But most of the time I can find nice patches of light, and I think we're going to record a video on this next week that we're going to title, I think, Looking for Light in the City, where we're going to do a photo walk looking for patches of light and trying to explain what it is I'm looking for, the ground patterns, the lighting patterns, the context. So hopefully if all goes to plan and the weather plays ball, there should be a video where it's precisely about this topic. But I don't take any kit. I just look for light. I look for shape in the light. Some tricks, look for a wall that the sun is shining on but has a shady area next to it. You'll always get big light coming off that. It's like having a great big studio softbox. Look for pools of light on the floor in amongst shadows. Again, that means you've got an almost spotlight in there somewhere. If you've got a circle of light on the floor, there's a spotlight creating that. You can use that light. I look for backlight. So if you've got, let's say, a building where the wall you're looking at is in shadow, but the light is, let's say the sun is setting over the building in the distance, which means you can see the sun and you can see the shadow. If you put someone in there looking at you, you'll get beautiful rim light. And even better, if you have a light wall behind you that can throw light back on them, you'll get big, soft, gorgeous light to play around in. And it's just looking for those and understanding how light hits the face, how it renders, how it shapes, and then just using that really, and a lot of practice. That's all, an awful lot of practice. Oh, and using manual exposure, because using the lighting patterns that I do, it would fool auto exposure. But so using manual exposure and really knowing your camera. So there you go, Pippa. I hope that answers your questions and I hope that's useful. And of course, if anyone else has any questions, then feel free to email them in. So on that happy note, I'm going to say goodbye now. I've got to go and do a portrait shoot, which I'm really excited about. I hope your weekend is panning really, really well. So until next time, remember, be kind to yourselves. Take care.